You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
The journey.
To the journey.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to this week's edition of To the Journey.
To the journey!
I don't know about you, Tristan, but I had a fantastic time at the Senkatsi, although the match was a little lopsided, I thought. What did you think? Did you have a good time?
You know that I love violence, but it was just a little too excessive.
Yeah, you know, when the knockout is about on the second round, and they keep going to the final round, which is two more rounds. I mean, wow.
I, for one, just don't think it's a fair fight to pair up a Klingon with a Bolian. That's just me, though. That's just me.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think that was the problem. It was so lopsided. It wasn't that much of a match, but hey, we're not here to talk about Senkatsi. We're here to talk about To the Journey, because we're finally back, and we're going to talk about Talaxians this week.
And I know that so many people, I could almost hear the collective eye roll when we announced that just now.
Oh, I don't know. I think even though maybe you are in a little bit of a minority here, there are some people who do like Talaxians. I mean, they're cute, they're furry, and even if you do think that they are rodents, as they have been referred to many times, maybe you don't totally hate them. Not entirely. They mean well.
Just because I love Neelix doesn't mean I love Talaxians.
Well, I'm sure we're going to go through all of the reasons why that is, and so why don't we just dig in? Like we tend to do on analyses here, we are going to talk about first impressions. So, Neelix was our first look into the Talaxians, and what did you think about him and all the race in general?
When you're introduced to a race, sometimes You'll either get one person or a whole bunch. You know, like you'll get a shipful or you'll get a representative of that government. But with Neelix, it was just a one-off. He was a trader. You know, he traded in junk. he was our only avenue to the race. So I loved the costuming. I loved his makeup, his hair. I loved his personality. I loved everything about him. I thought it was very unique. It was a style we'd never seen on Star Trek before, which was really refreshing.
Definitely. I totally agree with that. With my first impression, I loved the fact that the Talaxians were kind of quirky, almost goofy looking, but unique is definitely the word I was thinking too. Just kind of oddball out there people, very fun-loving and happy-go-lucky. And as it turns out, once we start learning a little bit about the backstory, they kind of remind me of the sad clown, where on the outside, they're very happy and joyful, but deep down inside, they have a lot of scars.
Well, and we can attribute those scars, or at least Neelix's, and probably a great deal of others, to the Metreon Cascade.
Right. So, yeah, let's talk about Jatrell, because that's where we get a lot of Talaxian backstory.
We get a lot of Talaxian backstory. We have talked about Jatrell a lot whenever we make a best of list. You know, of course, you know, I'm the one who talks about it. You know, and just for those of you who cannot remember, let me just read this passage real quick. The Metreon Cascade was a weapon of mass destruction designed by Dr. Mabor Jatrell of the Hakonian Order. It used unstable Metreon isotopes to create a devastating explosion, apparently similar to that of a nuclear weapon. The resulting radiation poisoning killed those who were not destroyed by the initial blast. Sufficient exposure to Metreons resulted in the deadly disease Metremia. Now, this devastated Rynax, the Talaxian moon, and
Absolutely.
It killed, I think, over 300,000 colonists.
Yeah, as I recall, it definitely killed at least 250,000 people just on the spot.
Yeah, and just then, on the spot.
way more suffered the radiation poisoning, basically, and suffered a long, drawn-out death as a side effect of that. So very obvious correlation between the U.S. bombing Japan and the nuclear winter and all that fun stuff. So similar thing happens on the Talaxian moon Rynax. And, of course, Neelix's family, we learn, all killed. They're gone.
Yeah.
And many, 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 many other people. And I thought this made a lot of sense that people like Neelix would kind of be scavengering around, just making do with whatever they could find. Because when that many people are killed off and put in such disarray, I don't know. I can see how that would translate almost to a scatterbrained, go-with-the-flow junker mentality, if you will. So easily, you're going to drift and you're going to do whatever you need to do to get by. You have no choice.
I like that they showed us this aspect of Neelix being an individual and choosing that path. But like you said, you know, it's very believable for a species or a group of people who went through this that they become nomadic in certain
yeah.
areas of life because of this great disaster. You know, when people don't have a homeland, they become nomadic. They search for other things continually. And now, granted, you know, you still had Talax. It's still never the same, especially after
right.
a great war like that. And especially when your entire family and your connection to Talax being Rynax is gone.
Right. Yeah, that makes me think of refugees when they've been displaced from their home country. I mean, this is a whole asteroid or planet, whatever you want to call it, homeland of people displaced. Yeah, they are going to scatter everywhere. And we get some follow-up with this in Fair Trade in Season 3 with Wix, Neelix's friend who'd been scattering about and kind of reminds Neelix of who he used to be, because this dude makes some shady deals to get by. And Neelix, you know what? I think he was kind of doing a similar thing before he got on Voyager, but he's obviously changed.
Let me just pause for a second on this. All right, so he's a Talaxian. His name is Neelix. He has a friend named Wixaban, and he's from a moon called Rynax. Let me just go down the list of known Talaxian names real quick.
Okay.
And let's see if the listeners can spot a theme.
Okay, go for it.
All right. Elixia, Brax, Dexa, Eldaxon, Gyrex, Lexeth, Neelix, Oxalon, Palaxia, Paxum, we've already mentioned Wixaban, and of course, Tuvix.
Gee, I can't tell. What is it?
this episode of To the Journey is brought to you by the letter X.
Indeed. Yes, yes. It's sort of like how Vulcans will have sort of like the T apostrophe whatever. Or
yeah, it's either an S or a T.
Yeah.
That's it.
So Talaxians love the letter X. You are not a Talaxian unless your name has the letter X in it.
It's so restrictive, but I like that Wix came back into Neelix's life, and I like the episode Fair Trade. A lot of people don't like it because, I don't know, the shady deals that are going on, and because, you know, Neelix was this big teddy bear. But I really liked it because it showed Neelix, you know, he's freaking out. He's just like, I have no more use after we go beyond this part of space. Am I going to have
yeah.
to go back to this type of lifestyle that Wixaban is still leading, but that Neelix left behind? And it's just nice to see that Neelix is not alone in the universe, that that Wix
right.
is another representative of the Talaxian race.
Sure, yeah. And I think the crisis that Neelix was going through is something, I mean, we can all relate to on some sort of level. Like, how are we useful? Are we going to be useful forever, say, maybe in our chosen career or what have you? Or is time going to churn us out and make us do something else? And this was going to be an inevitable issue for Neelix. I mean, he didn't know the whole Delta Quadrant. How could he? So I'm really glad that they brought this up. And I'm glad that he
right.
was freaking out about it because he needed to.
I'm really glad that they didn't continue on the whole, you know, I'm the guide. I know this region of space. You know, you need to get some spices or a good burger. You know, talk to me. And it was refreshing that they had a limit to his knowledge in this specified area.
Definitely, especially since his knowledge was kind of spotty at best. So it was very good that they made him freak out just a little and made him realize, you know what, I might need to redefine myself just a little bit if I want to stay useful on this ship, if I want to continue having the life that I'm having. But you know what I love about Talaxians is they're very versatile people. They learn a very diverse skill set.
Even though, like, Wix was really the first Talaxian that we got to know, we did see some other group of Talaxians when in Basics Part 1 and 2, when Tom was asking them for help, and they weren't all, you know, junk dealers and narcotic smugglers. But we didn't really get to know them, but we knew that the Talaxians were there to help out Voyager when they needed them most.
Yeah, they were helpful, and I'd like to think of those guys as maybe more part of the Talaxian military fleet instead of civilian junkers scattering around in an asteroid belt. At least that's how it seemed to me. I mean, that's not canon or anything. That's just my fanon, as Phil Gilfus says.
My fanon. I like that.
Yeah, isn't that a great word?
Fanon or headcanon, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. So that's the impression that I had of that. And so that's another thing we should probably talk about is the fact that Talaxians, even though they can be a little bit annoying, they do mean well and they want to be helpful. They really do try to go out of their way to make other people happy and comfortable and maybe get them what they want if they're doing a barter or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. And we heard a mention of a Talaxian writer. Even though we didn't really get to hear any of his prose, we heard Gyrex, you know, where Neelix was talking about how he never, you know, went to sleep without reading at least one of his parables. That's definitely one thing that I appreciate about Star Trek, is that when they present you with a race, I mean, whether it's a warrior race or a scientific race or, you know, a kind of a useless race that only has pleasure on the mind, they try to show you at least a little bit of each aspect. Like, even with the Klingons, we see lawyer Klingons. And
right.
When we see Romulans, we see, you know, people who run restaurants, you know. And it's just, it was, even though we just got a little bit of a mention, it was nice to hear about a writer. Because beforehand, it was just people, like, running cargo ships and trader ships and everything like that. Like, that was the only aspect of Talaxian life that we really got to know.
Right. Like many other species of the Delta Quadrant, they too were writers and artists, as you always like to say.
It's true. It was really hard for me not to mention that, so I'm really glad that you said that.
I had to go there. I had to. Take a drink. That's going to go in the drinking game. I think it has to.
We're forgetting another writer. I forgot that Gyrex was not the only one, but Aldaxon's collected folklore about the Vodwar.
Oh, yeah. So
I completely forgot about that.
I mean, apparently there's got to be some Talaxian version of Shakespeare out there.
Yeah, I feel like it might have been a little bit more like Grimm's fairy tales, because I looked I looked at these titles, and these titles totally sound like something that should exist. Like, listen to these. The Demon with the Golden Voice, The Tale of the Deadly Stranger, The Tale of the Boy Who Lost His Head, and The Tale of the Bloody Hand. I mean, if that's not some Edgar Allan Poe, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Little Golden Books Gone Wrong hollow novel version.
Awesome.
Yeah, I want to see that. I want to see Neelix and Naomi go through these. Oh, I don't know what they might be, like parables or something. With some sort of morality embedded in it. Yeah. I could totally see that happening. Somehow Flotter will get in on it.
I was just about to say, I was like, I'd love to see those combined with Flotter in some way.
Yeah. That would be amazing. I'd let my kid do it.
Now, we were talking about how we've seen writers, we've seen traders. For the longest time, never saw a Talaxian colony.
Yes.
But we did eventually.
Yes. In the 7th season, no less. So we waited a long time for this, and I don't know about you, but I was definitely not expecting Talaxians by season 7 at all.
It was definitely a pleasant surprise because we got so little of them throughout the show. We just got a mentions and flash of the race on the screen of somebody helping out just for a couple of seconds. Like, Wixabatton was the only character that we really got to know until the seventh season. And this was, for those of you who don't remember, this is episode Homestead, which was the 23rd episode of the seventh season.
So almost at the end.
Almost to the end. There was only one episode after this that wasn't the series finale. And this was Neelix's send-off. This was his goodbye. And thankfully, we got a shot of him in Endgame, just a quick one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is, you know, he finds a Talaxian colony on an asteroid, which is, like, it's just so weird.
No, I think this is a testament to the fact that, yes, the Talaxians are drifters because they got way out here. But then also, they're making a homestead inside an asteroid and almost had to flee from there, too, because this Captain Nakona guy, he wants to mine the asteroid for its minerals, says that he owns it, and it almost happens, yada, yada, yada. And what I really did like, though, was the fact that Neelix inadvertently kind of became a father figure to Brax, who sounds a lot like Prax.
Prax.
I know.
Which every time I hear the name, I'm thinking, Prax!
Prax!
It's so hard for me not to say that out loud when I watch this episode.
Yeah, it goes off in my head every single time I hear the name. And, you know, he kind of adopts this family. Or do they adopt him? I don't know, maybe a little bit of both. They become a family. And it's very cute, and I always thought Neelix was a good family man. He needed this. This was his last chance. He knew it. He took it. Good for him.
I just... okay, see, that's the thing that I wanted to talk to you about is you see this in TV and movies all the time. Like, I know this happens in real life constantly, and I'm not saying that it doesn't. So many times where a man will find a woman who is in need of a husband and in his need of a father for her child. And then all of a sudden, the guy goes from zero to crazy responsibility overnight. And yeah. it just kind of bugs me. Now, granted, in TV shows, you don't have the kind of time to develop that kind of relationship unless it's well thought up beforehand.
Right.
I guess just the frequency of how often we see this in TV and movies, it just kind of bugs me where it was like, he's like, yeah, he's a bachelor. Then all of a sudden he's a husband and father, you know, just out of nowhere.
Turns his life around 180 degrees overnight. So yeah. It's the frequency at which this happens that bothers you. Not so much the fact that, well, it does happen.
Yeah. It's not so much that it does happen because it does. I've seen people in my own life have that happen to them all the time, but it's never overnight. It's never like, you know what, I'm going to leave my job, I'm going to leave my house, and instead of starting my own family, I'm going to borrow somebody else's.
Okay, that's an interesting perspective. I didn't actually think about that, just the overnight change and how, you know what, yeah, a lot of guys do that.
Yeah, and Leo, like I said, I mean, I've seen it happen with my own friends. It's just... It's just every time I turn on the TV, I'm seeing a character do this, or they flirt with the idea, you know, on the show.
So, do you think that was a decent send off for Neelix then, or would you have done something different?
I did like their farewell to Neelix when they lined up on the hall. It was very reminiscent of Worf's farewell.
Yeah.
Part of me really wanted to see him on Earth because he had talked about it for 7 years. You know, he talked about how much he wanted to be there and talk about everything that he knew, you know, that he learned from the Delta Quadrant and, you know, give that to the Federation. And and just like, I could see him opening up a shop with right next to Cisco's. And it's just... I don't know, part of me wanted to see that as a fan, but I also appreciate the writers doing this because we all expected Neelix to do this. We all expected him to go to Earth.
It's true. It so is. And as much as, yeah, I would love to have seen Neelix on Earth too, just for the very reason, like, he has all these wonderful ideas. I have this vision of him being, like the Rachel Ray of Earth, and he's going to have a cooking show.
With Neelix on Earth, you know, it's just...
Something like that, and then there's going to be like the recipe section where he does something new with Leola root every day, and it's going to be just fantastic. But, yeah, we were expecting that, and so they threw us a little bit of a twist here, so I'll give him props.
But then, you know, like, because this episode is about Talaxians on a whole and not just Neelix, we got to see it from that perspective. Just imagine if you're with, like, you're the only one of your kind and you're getting closer and closer to their home and farther away from yours. And you find a group of, like, you find a group of humans and you never think you're going to see another human again. And then all of a sudden you see a fine woman. or a fine man, and at that time you're just like, you know what, this is my last chance. This is literally my last chance to be with my own kind. And Neelix chose to be with his own kind.
Yeah, it's sort of a microcosm of what the 37s would have been like had it occurred in season 7.
Yes, this was Neelix's 37s.
Yes, it was, and we even got to see a little more of the city.
Yes, finally, yeah.
Yes. I also, with this group of Talaxians, while we're talking about them, I did find it very interesting how they really didn't trust outsiders. They had been pushed around so much that, really, other people were not welcome, which goes against other Talaxians as we knew them before. But it makes a lot of sense, considering they're the way out there, and there were how many of them? 400, 500? Not too many.
Not too many. Not a lot. I mean, we're not talking about great numbers here, and people are already trying to push them around. They're on their own. They're really far away from their homeland, and so they made their own home, and yeah, I mean, I would be distrustful too, and
absolutely.
They're on their own, and I mean, the Delta Quadrant is not a nice place.
No, it can be pretty unfriendly. And you know what? Another thing I appreciated about these Talaxians in particular, not only were they resourceful and created this homestead in the asteroid, but it did show how self-reliant Talaxians are. I guess that is an outreach of resourcefulness, but you know what? Okay, if we can't trust other people to help us out and work with us, fine, we'll do it on our own. We can do it. We did. That's all.
One thing that we can talk about to wrap up this episode is we do know a little bit about their spirituality.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we're missing a huge thing here. Mortal Coil.
Yeah, where it's revealed in Mortal Coil. This is a key Neelix episode, but we also get to see a lot about their beliefs in the afterlife, their religious beliefs, and we know that they believe that they go to a place called the Great Forest. They keep little models of things called a guiding tree. It's kind of a religious object, and that's where you're supposed to meet your family, you know, like the souls of the deceased. And it's very, very similar to many religions on Earth.
Right.
But I do like that. I like that we get to see some religion, and we get to see some religious beliefs from a person in the 24th century, and we get to see those religious ideals shaken.
Yeah, very much to the core. I mean, that's what the whole episode is about. I thought that was a fantastic way to not only introduce another species' religious beliefs, but then to parallel them with what we have here on Earth, and then to make us question it, because Star Trek does that so well. And to watch Neelix go through that process of, oh my god, I think everything that I've believed all of my life is pure and utter crap. What do I do now?
Absolutely.
Pre-crisis. I mean, that's awesome.
And in that crisis, we get to see this fantastic expression, which is a Talaxian expression. When the road before you splits in two, take the third path.
I think that describes the Talaxians in a nutshell.
I think so too, and also in this episode we get some great gems. I mean, granted that expression was from author, but something else that we get in Mortal Coil is the unveiling of Prixen.
Oh yes, Prixen.
Which I believe is kind of the favorite holiday of of To the Journey.
I mean, we did do the Prixen message.
Yes, we did. So I think that's kind of our favorite holiday on TTJ is Prixen.
All right. Well, what do you say we wrap this baby up, shall we?
Absolutely. If I'm not mistaken, we have an iTunes review.
We do. Yes, we have someone named Lulu with lots of U's and then 777777. Lots of sevens for leaving us a 5-star iTunes rating and a short review. And Lulu said that she knows me. I'm assuming it's a she. I'm sorry if I'm wrong. Lulu says that she knows me from the Delta Quadrant podcast, which I did before we started up TTJ. And that's another Voyager podcast, by the way. They go through episode by episode reviews, whereas we discuss the show as a whole, and they are currently on season 5. So give that a look if you're looking for episode reviews. So many thanks to Lulu 777777 ad nauseam for leaving a 5-star iTunes review. And if you haven't done that, please do, because we love it. We'll give you a shout out on the show, and it helps other people find TTJ.
And not only that, but you can contact us as well. And so please do so. You can send us a message by going to trek.fm/contact, select To the Journey, and let us know what you think. Or if you want, you can start a discussion with other listeners and Trek fans by going to our forums. Visit trek.fm/forums and start a thread there. And please send us a show topic. And if we like it, we'll use it on air and we'll mention you on the podcast. And you can also tweet us. You can find Char at Oh the Profanity and me at The Insane Robin.
But of course, TTJ is not just the only show on Trek FM. We've got a whole network with daily Trek talk. And so let's do a little preview of what else has been happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Space Seed Commentary.
And in this proposal, it opens up with Kirk and Spock playing chess. And then Spock actually cheats in order to win and gets caught and is a little bit embarrassed.
Earl Grey.
Civilians on TNG.
I'd say that, the Enterprise is lucky to have Mott. He is the heir to the great bullion applesauce fortune.
The Orb.
Raising children on the station.
It has sort of a big city, small town feel. In terms of population and size, it's that small town. But in terms of cultural diversity and the challenges that you face as a parent and the things that your children are exposed to, it has more of that big city feel to it.
The Ready Room.
Remember me.
The computer tells Beverly that there's a flaw in the ship's design as the warp bubble is shrinking. And I'm thinking, damn you, Starfleet engineers, why do you build a ship that's larger than the universe itself?
To the Journey!
Season 3 Marathon.
Not that I want to get too detailed here, but I'm wondering if that's all it would take if he mated with a human or if he would just have to use human form. But I just love it when John Delancey's like, I was good, wasn't I? And then she's like, yeah. Warp 5.
Prequel technology.
You almost feel like photon torpedoes should have happened 50 years after Enterprise and they should have gone through 3 different kinds that you'd never heard of. And that seems more real to me.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Future Sport.
He's from the streets, but he has left that life behind, and like he has become like a sellout in a sense. He's about the winning at all costs and not the true essence of Future Sport.
Literary Treks.
Editing Star Trek with Margaret Clark.
I try to make sure that the books are true to their series, that if you're reading a TOS book, it feels like, okay, Bob Justman would have bought this story. He couldn't afford the effect, but Bob Justman would have gone into Gene and went, you really should read this, this is good.
Melodic Treks.
The Klingon Theme.
Goldsmith's Klingon theme established an aggressive tribal atmosphere for the warlike characters. Goldsmith made it clear in an interview that he wrote the whole Klingon music with bad guys in mind.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Let's take a very short break and talk a little bit about our sponsor. So Tristan, why don't you let us know about who that is?
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Next week, we're going to do something a little bit fun. We're going to do a commentary, which we haven't done in a little while, so it's time to bring that sexy back. And what episode are we going to do, Tristan?
We are going to do a good, good episode and something that is ripe for commentary, and that is Living Witness, where the Doctor is trapped in another time on another world out of place.
So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!